At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to another episode of De Stefano Talks, talking Scottish football. This is episode number 12. On the podcast with me today, as always, is Lewis Laird. Lewis, how are you doing?
Good, Stefan. Cheers. Pleasure, as always.
Also on the show, we have a recurring guest, Mark Cunningham. Mark, you're all the way in Spain, but how are you doing?
Hi, all good, mate. All good, Stefan. How are you doing? How are you doing, Lewis, as well? Hope yous are all good.
Aye, not too bad. And we also have a new addition to the podcast. For the next couple of weeks, or more than a couple of weeks, for the next wee while, Declan, how are you doing?
Good, mate. It's good to be on.
Obviously, we will recap both those games in the Premiership, as we normally do, but also the Scotland team is set to be out tomorrow, to be announced by Steve Clarke on the players that will join him as Scotland attempt to qualify for the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. So we'll come on to that and we'll sort of go through the names of who we think should be in Steve Clarke's team. I think it picks itself, but we'll go through it anyway because we don't have many other talking points with there only being two Premiership games. So let's just start off really with those two games. Livingston versus Hamilton, quite a tight even affair. It ended 2-1 to Livingston, and sort of David Martindale's team can, you know, they solidified a top six place after a great season. But what did you guys think of the game, Lewis, if we start with you?
Yeah, no, it was, I think it was three goals in the first 40 minutes, so it's probably not what you're expecting from Hamilton versus Livingston. To be honest, you probably expect more of a goalless draw or something, but it seemed like a good start to the game. I mean, the first goal and the second goal, to be fair, both great goals. Great finish by the Jet, as he's called, and it was a decent game, and certainly one that Livingston will be happy to get back to winning ways, especially after the last few weeks and, you know, the cup final disappointment, but they're sort of getting back now.
Mark?
As you said, top six secured nicely for Livingston. Got to be seen for the fit and proper David Martindale, a very, very good achievement to get him secured in the top six. Always a tough place to go for many teams. And yeah, I was really, really impressed with the quality of goals, especially. And I'm going to actually great from the way from J. Emmanuel Thomas with a lovely touch, turn and finish, really. Basically strikers, bread and butter, touch, turn, finish, you know. And it was great coming in from a throw-in. But it's the equaliser that I was really impressed with was Brian Easton's tackle basically makes that goal. It wins it back in the middle of the park. It's a superb slide tackle. And then it breaks to Callum Smith, and he cuts inside beautifully, takes on the Livingston defence and fires it right into the far corner. It was an absolute beauty.
Declan?
Just to echo what Lewis was saying, it was probably not the most appetising fixture for the neutrals, but it was a decent game with glimpses of quality. Obviously, with the Jets' goal, probably showing a glimpse of why Arsenal gave him a cap at an appearance, I think, at the start of his career. So, and obviously the equaliser as well was a nice finish. I thought Pittman and J. Emmanuel Thomas linked up quite well, and they were too much for Hamilton to handle, and I think Livy probably did deserve to nick it in the end. And obviously what an achievement securing the top six finish with the budget that they're on. So
yeah, you mentioned the budget that obviously Livingston are on. It's a phenomenal achievement considering maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years ago they were in League One and then they were in the Championship. So it is a fantastic achievement for Livingston. You know, watching the replay of the Jets goal, as he's called, I think that's goal of the season for me. And I know the season hasn't ended, but so far, I'm yet to see a better finish scored. I don't know what you guys think.
It's probably up there. I'd say, I'm trying to think of one off the top. Ryan Jack's finish against St Johnstone for Rangers, I think, was a great finish in terms of the kind of game as well. That's possibly a game in previous seasons that they might have dropped points or got a draw, and it was looking like it was going that way, and he pulled some strike out of nowhere that I've never seen him do before. So I think in terms of the quality of the finish and how important that may have been, it's probably up there as well. But I couldn't really argue if they gave it to his finish for the Jets' finish for his technique. It's brilliant.
What about yourself, Chris?
Yeah, look, it's a great bit of skill. I think if people were comparing it, saying it was Thierry Henry-esque in terms of the flick up and the finish right in the top corner. I think it'll be a bit short in terms of goal of the season. As Declan says, Ryan Jack's finish is probably definitely like up there with the volleyed effort, but it's an incredible bit of skill and finish, to be fair to him.
Mark?
Absolutely. Probably I would agree that probably I'd certainly think that Ryan Jack would feel hard done by if this goal was to beat him for goal of the season. But I've had a wee chuckle there at the Thierry Henry-esque comment there. But really, as I say, it's just it was a fabulous finish. But do you know what I will say about that game as well? And actually, the second goal was Levy's second goal from Pittman is actually really, really good move. Really good, a really good move from the team. Great cross for Nicky Devlin as well, by the way. And it was a bit fortunate to fall into the path of him. But I don't know if anybody clocked Josh Mullins' effort, by the way. This would have been goal of the season.
He just cuts in
and it hits the bar. It was an absolute cracker. That would have probably easily been up there for goal of the season. What a strike that was. You feel really, really hard done by it. That never nestled right into the top corner.
Obviously the Jets goal wasn't the only decent goal in the game. We also had Smith's equaliser. I thought that was a stunner. I think someone mentioned that Brian Easton picked the ball up off of J. Emmanuel Thomas, gave the ball to Smith, and he drove forward and took a hit. I tell you what, I thought the goalkeeper's positioning for that was, he always looked like he was scrambling to get there. It was a great goal, but it was a shot I suppose you would expect the keeper to save. Maybe it caught him off guard. I don't know, but it was a great equaliser. I don't know what you guys think, Mark.
If you fancy a goalkeeper's point of view, I'll give you as a for the last time. I would say I can really see where you're coming from, to be honest with that. But with that being said, see when you've got somebody cutting across like that, your defence, you've got a lot of people in your way, so you can sometimes get a bit sort of blocked. Your view can get obstructed slightly by the defenders. And it's kind of the way he's hit it as well, that he's kind of, as an old Scottish word to use, he's rasped it a wee bit. He's hit it really, really well. And sometimes a keeper there, you don't know whether he's going to maybe close his foot on it and try and reverse it back to you, or whether he's going to do what he did and go for the far corner. So it's a hard one, because it's just one of them where it's that well hit. But I would be putting it down to a good strike by the boy, by Callum Smith, before I was maybe wanting to criticise the goalkeeper. But I can certainly see where people are coming from with his positioning. Perhaps could have moved his feet a wee bit quicker. That could have been one to say for that one as well, Stefan, you know.
Lewis?
Yeah, no, I think Mark's hit it on the head there in terms of, you can see it from your point of view, maybe he could have done better, but I think there's so many bodies in front. It's a great finish for Smith. He gets some of power behind it as well and just finds the bottom corner. McCrory will probably be frustrated with himself, because I'm sure all goalkeepers are, unless it's one of these top corner goals that impossible to save. He'll always think he can get across and he'll be disappointed at that, but it's a great finish, and I think it'll be a bit harsh to blame the keeper completely.
I think Hamilton will need more of the same of that if they want to stay up, because I think it's one of the hardest things to predict who's going to go down, because they seem to do it every year, but they'll definitely need more of the same.
Just quickly touching on that, do you think Hamilton will go down? They are now 3 points behind Ross County. I think five games? No, there must be about six games to go now.
Six. Well, not five.
One more before the split and then the split games.
Yeah.
Yeah, so six. I'm going to put my head on the block here. I'm going to say Hamilton are going to go down. Might not be automatically, but I don't see them coming out of 11th place, to be honest. I'm going to say I think they will go down via the relegation playoffs or the Premiership playoffs. I don't know what they're called.
Do you know, I was just about to say that. You need to take into account now that we've got the structure in, we've got the playoffs as well. So would you turn around and say to yourself, would you fancy one of the potential winners of the sort of the championship play, like the second, third, or fourth, like the sofa with the playoff there? Would you fancy the winners to beat probably any of our bottom three teams just now? I said, but then yeah, again, Hamilton Accies, as Declan very, very correctly pointed out, has been they just seem to have this bug at the end of the season where they just seem to grind and just seem to be able to survive by the skin of just get through with the skin of their teeth, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going to put my head out on the line, and please, I'm probably going to suffer for this on Twitter at the end of the season. I think that Accies might stay up, and I think they'll stay up. And they'll win their relegation playoff. There you go, there's a prediction.
I think if you look at the championship, there's teams like Dunfermline, Raith Rovers, Dundee, Queen of the South, all sort of will be facing to get to the Premiership playoff final. So if Hamilton came up against a Dundee or a Dunfermline or even a Raith Rovers, I don't know why. I just fancy the chances of the championship side. I don't know if that's more in a hope sort of sense, but I definitely think they are in trouble. And as are Kilmarnock, because they are languishing in 12th place, and that's not where you want to be, especially for a club the size of Kilmarnock. Anyway, let's move on from that and move on to the other game. It was Ross County versus Hibs. What did you guys think of that game, Lewis?
Yeah, no, it's quite strange, but it seemed to be, it's typically Scotland, wouldn't it? It seemed to be nice weather first half, and then it was absolutely pouring in the second. So it's probably something you don't miss, Mark, to be honest, over in Spain.
No, mate, it's like 20, 23, 24 degrees. This is at like 10 in the morning. It's nuts here. It's roasting in the morning. So, no, I don't miss it at all. I don't miss it at all, mate.
That's what you expect here. But no, it was a decent game overall, I thought. Again, it was a big one for Hibs. I thought getting those 3 points could be crucial in securing that third place and stretching away from Aberdeen with the game in hand. It's a good way. There's some decisions, dodgy decisions, we'll say, from John Beaton that will be talked about, I'm sure, but they'll certainly be happy with the 3 points.
Mark?
Yep, absolutely. Do you know, I'm going to, and I defended a goalkeeper there. I'm actually going to have a wee, I'm going to have a wee go at Marciano here, and I'll tell you why, right? Now, I thought that he actually, see for Billy Mackay's goal, I don't know if the build-up to the goal, the ball's in the air for an eternity. Now, it's not as if it's just floated in. The boy's, it's physically been punted up into the air, and it actually ends up halfway in his box. I would be expecting my goalkeeper to come out and be cleaning house. The ball's up there for a good 3-5 seconds as it's basically just returned back, and then it ends up in the box, breaking to Billy Mackay. Fabulous finish. But I don't know what you guys think. I was watching it, and I thought to myself, I'm going to be a wee bit disappointed with my goalkeeper there. I don't know why it'd be hypercritical, but especially try to be a bit of confidence into the second half, 50 minutes. The half's just started. Calm your defence down as they've just come out after half-time. I don't know what you guys think about that. I was wanting to ask you about that.
I think I think the first half was, on the whole, I think it was just, there wasn't much action. I don't think there was a shot on target in the first half. And then, as Lewis alluded to about the rain, I think that's what actually brought a bit of action to the game. There was a couple of dodgy decisions and fiery challenges, and I just think probably it is an important win for Hibs, and I think that they've just done enough. I think they had more chances to score, but I think Ross County, looking back, will be disappointed, didn't take a few chances. I think one failed. I can't mind who it was in the box, but they had a few. They missed two settles in the box right after each other, and I think that just to go back to you talking about the relegation, I think County are in trouble. Just chances like that, you miss them, you'll get punished for it. So I think County could be in trouble because of that. But as I said, I think Hibs done enough, and I think that obviously they had quite a few chances as well. Obviously they had Nisbet on the bench, who scored now 14 goals, I think it is, this season, after his goal to win it for them. So I think when you've got players like that coming off the bench, you've obviously just had too much in the end. But yeah.
Okay.
Another great winner from Kevin Nisbet, and Declan's absolutely spot on. It was Keith Watson had the chance in the box. He's kind of slipped as he's hit it a wee bit, and it's hit it straight at Marciano, and then the follow-up was basically a volley in the warm-up for a goalkeeper. It was just kind of knocked back into his hands again by Ross County Centre. I think it was the Ross County Centre forward that was at the time as well. Just basically a really, really good 3 points for Hibs, and I've got to completely agree with what Declan says as well about Ross County there. And under the new management of John Hughes coming in, and that wee bit of trouble, aren't they?
I think when you look at it in the context of the season, it doesn't look good, because Ross County shouldn't be in 10th place. You would expect them to be in about 7th or 8th. I think mathematically they still are in trouble, but I genuinely can't see... If I have to put Hamilton and Ross County picking up more points towards the end of the season, I'm going to say it will be Ross County. So as much as they are in danger mathematically, I don't think that they are in danger, like, realistically to go down. I don't know, you guys might disagree.
They've got a tough game coming up away to St Johnson, who need to win to get into the top six. So that could be... It's looking to me likely that they're going to lose that game before the split. So Kilmarnock are at home to Motherwell, I think, or maybe away to Motherwell. I think that's a tough game as well. So, but I could see there's more chance of Kilmarnock maybe nicking something in the Motherwell game than there is Ross County away to St Johnstone. So,
I'm looking at Hamilton's game there. They're coming up against St Mirren, who are also trying to, stake their place in to virtually be in the top six. So again, it's very interesting. It makes for an interesting relegation story. But I don't know. There's just nothing that's going to convince me that Hamilton will manage to come out of 11th place going upwards.
I think the games at the weekend, what you can say is coming out of them, the team that came out best was Kilmarnock with those two results. In terms of both Hamilton and Ross County losing, if they were both to win, they could have stretched away. So they'll be happy with this weekend. I'm intrigued to see. Obviously, the next games coming up will be crucial, but the split games will be brilliant to watch, to be honest, in the bottom half especially. They're all facing off against each other, and it will decide who will get relegated and who will stay up. So it'll be intriguing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Was it a penalty for Hibs? Martin Boyle was criticised by John Hughes and said that the last time he'd seen a dive as good as that, the guy was wearing Speedos. I don't know why I found that funny. It was just a classic one-liner. But, you know, when I watched it, I think there was a nudge on him, and I think in the realms of the game, and, you know, if you touch and the player goes down, it is a penalty, but I thought it was soft and I thought he was looking for it. I don't know what you guys think.
100% soft, I agree with you. I think that the Ross County defender, I don't think he could see him coming, and his natural reaction was it was moving towards the ball. He wasn't thinking about the man, I don't think, and Martin Boyle, obviously. But then I suppose that is the good thing about having players like him, like nippy players that can nip in and get you the decisions. I don't know if... I think it was soft, but I have seen them given. They can be given, and it's just... It's one of the ones that is unfortunate for the Ross County defender, and it's been that lot. It's obviously, as I go back to, like, their luck just doesn't seem to be going for them now. And that's a decision that could cost them, obviously. But it was a harsh decision, I think.
Lewis?
Yeah, look, he's clever from Boyle. I think he's looking for that. He's going in and he sort of sticks his leg out. Well, I would say, I think I wouldn't be blaming John Beaton too much for this one in terms of the way Boyle's jumped in. You can see maybe it's soft, but it's a foul. He only gets to see it once. I've seen many replays, and obviously we see and think he's bought that, but he sees Martin Boyle running at pace, and we know how quick Boyle is, and he's went and won that penalty. The one that got me was the second one. The Boyle was definitely a diving. It annoys me when referees don't do anything about that. He's not given anything, so it's clearly got to be either a dive or a penalty. What one or the other, you know? But he's just left it and skipped by it, and that could be a crucial point in the game with Boyle on a yellow card.
But see even going back to that, like Boyle's kind of known for that. Like he's like that. He's not if put a bad tag on his name, but he is a kind of he's tries to outsmart the ref, and he will look for them the kind of opportunities and their decisions. And I think that I agree with you that saying that John Beaton can't really be at fault for the penalty decision, but I think that he's got to be more wise in terms of how Martin Boyle is as that type of footballer. And as you said, he should have been punished for that. I think that dive was shocking. The second one in the box.
I agree. I think he's fought the. I think go back to the John Hughes' comment about the speedos. I think that Martin Boyle fought in the second half of the pitch and turned into a swimming pool, honestly. because the second dive is an absolute disgrace. And I agree. It's in a time of the game as he gets booked, he's off. But then is that John Beaton bottling it? Has John Beaton bottled it to book him? Well, he really should, for me, he should have. He needs to. If you want to cut diving out of football, you need to get your cards out when you've got players diving. Now, the first one buying the penalty, yes, there's a bit of contact. I'd echo the comments of everybody that it's definitely soft ones that you've seen given in that category. But the second dive is a total disgrace. It just knocks it in front. And I know I get hit with this argument a lot. What happens if he dives and wins like a Champions League final or wins a World Cup final for you? But at the end of the day, he's still dived. He's cheated. He's dived. And he's looking to try and deceive the referee. And again, I've been in the same boat as Declan. I don't want to tag him. We are all named. So to make it very clear, I'm not calling him a cheat. But what I am saying is, I think in general that some diving as a form can be obviously interpreted as a form of cheating, if you get what I mean.
I think for me, the first one was soft. I'm not going to say it was a dive because it wasn't. There was contact on him, so he had every right to go down. And I don't dispute anyone that does that. If you feel contact, go down. I think a lot of managers would urge you in that situation if you feel the contact, go down. But the second one was abysmal. You know, and John Beaton's staring right at it, and he, as Lewis mentioned, you either, you know, you book him for diving or it's a penalty. You can't just move on from it. It's one of those, you know, calls in the game that you have to make, and strong referees make those kind of calls. If you look at the game in England yesterday with Arsenal and Tottenham, Lamela had a few opportunities where he was getting away with stuff that should have been a booking. He then got booked, and although he took the ball, it was sort of the intent. It was reckless, and he got booked for it. He then swung the arm at, I think it was Tierney, and got sent off. Big referees don't bottle calls like that. If players are being given chances and they sort of don't take them, then they've got every right to be sent off. And that's the case for Martin Boyle yesterday. He should have seen red at some point in the game, because that dive was terrible. And then when you take into account the challenge that he actually got booked for, I thought that was a sending off as well, because he jumped in. It looked two-footed. Yeah, Martin Boyle, he's a lucky boy. I don't know, you guys might disagree, but I think he's extremely lucky.
I agree with you. I think he is lucky. I think it was 100% a second. I don't think anyone can argue it was a second yellow card, and he's a red. He should be off the park. But to go back to your comment about the first challenge, I think initially it looks worse than what it actually is. I think he is late, but he kind of slides over and I'm still not fully sure, but I think it was. It was a yellow card, I'd say. I'd agree with it being a yellow. I don't know if... I suppose you couldn't really argue if it was a red, but I think it was a yellow. But there's no doubt about that second one that's a yellow as well, and he should be off. And obviously, I think that could be crucial as well going into the remaining games, because if he's off, he's one of their most influential players. I know they've got a few, but he is one that really makes them click. And obviously, like, next they're away to Livy, and we all know how tough it is to go to Livy and break them down. So I think him being available for that one could be, it's like a small margins again, but it could be huge.
I think he could receive a ban because he didn't get booked for the tie. Yeah. I think he could get a two-game ban. But I think Hibs will be fine. Like, with those 3 points, they will be fine in terms of they're 6 points ahead of Aberdeen. Yeah. They should, well, we don't know what Hibs this season are, but inconsistent. So they should be fine. And if Boyle's sort of sent off in that game, that could cost them. So it's more about probably Ross County's effect that they've not received sort of playing against 10 men when they really should have with Martin Boyle.
He just as a wee quick side note, as you mentioned Lamella there, I just started smiling. I think the Premier League's goal of the season category's kind of wrapped up a wee bit with that. Anyway.
And if that was
unbelievable.
I didn't see the goal because I turned in after half time, and I was hearing them. They were talking about this great goal for Eric Lamella, and I was like, I wish these guys would shut up. You're talking about this great goal. It can't be that good. And then I seen it at the end of the game, and I was like, oh, I fear this. That was a cracker.
It's not even the first time he's done it. That's the thing.
Nah, I know. The technique, but to get it along the ground with that power, and it wasn't even like he had a kind of big swing. It was just like it happened quite quickly, and he got so much power behind it.
I thought it was something that TPC and Sawgrass was on it last night in the golf as well. It was like one of the wee punch shots that you get out of the tee box. So you just punched, skip it onto the green. It was like one of them. It was as if he took a 5-iron punch out of his left foot.
No, it was a great finish. I know a guy that's been on the podcast before, James, he's an Arsenal fan. He'll be happy with that. But I kind of got over how good a goal that was. Right, let's move on. We've covered both the games that we had to cover. Obviously, Steve Clark will be announcing his Scotland team tomorrow. I was looking at players that could be and maybe should be in the team to help Scotland try and qualify for the World Cup. I think a lot of people will say, well, to be honest, Stefan, that the Scotland team picks itself. And it's hard to argue with that because the players I've noted down all played in the Serbia game. But I just wanted to get what you guys thought. So I'll name my team. You guys don't have to name everyone. You can just tell me if you sort of agree with it. So start off with goalkeeper. I've put in David Marshall.
Yep, absolutely.
The only thing is he had an injury recently. So he's missed a bit of action. So I'm not sure if he was back at the weekend. I need to check for Derby, but I do know he's had an injury recently, so I wouldn't be surprised to see Craig Gordon starting.
Okay. I love how you always do that.
I'd agree with Marshall, but obviously if he's took a knock, then, I mean, I think Austria are obviously coming into this game with, 16 or more other players. Mm-hmm. So I think, not that you're taking a huge punt putting Gordon in, because I still think he is a solid goalkeeper, but... I think, I'd go with Marshall if he's fit.
Yeah, he was on the bench in the weekend, so I suppose they'll see him training, but I wouldn't be too surprised to see Gordon starting.
And I wouldn't have any debate over Craig Gordon starting either, because the point is, if David Marshall's not 100% fit, I know as you heard me there say, their penalty save hero, if he's 100% fit, then he plays. He's a Scotland number one now, and it's his jersey to lose. But the thing about it is, if he's not fit, then there's no harm in getting a very, very, very good, solid goalkeeper as well, and Craig Gordon back into the Scotland fold as well. I don't think there's any issues with that at all.
It's not looking in the last squad. Sorry, Stephen. It was John McLaughlin would have been the third keeper, but I think somebody like Liam Kelly could be in a shout of maybe not starting, but I think he'll be in a shout of getting in the squad with the performances he's had recently.
I was going to say that. Because I would put Kelly in ahead of Gordon, and that's not because I've got an agenda against Gordon. It might be, but no, I would be having John McLaughlin or Liam Kelly in before Gordon. But definitely Marshall should be number one. And do you know what? There's something about Craig Gordon. I think he's overrated. And I think his time at Celtic kind of shows that. Like, yeah, okay, he won everything that he sort of could have won at Celtic. But seeing big games, he was not that great. You look at Inter Milan, 3-3, you know. He had some absolute howlers for Celtic.
Was it Leipzig or Salzburg he threw the ball at?
Salzburg, eh?
Salzburg,
yeah. I think the game was done anyway, but I agree. I don't know about overrated, because I don't think he was, like, I do get what you mean in a sense where, like, the Celtic support that, obviously, I think hindsight's a wonderful thing. Let us see that go back and see that go back and say now we shouldn't have let Craig Gordon go, but I can tell you right now, at the time he left, I was not caring at all. I thought it was the right time for him to leave. Maybe he was hard done by behind the scenes. I think there was talk of his wages were they getting cut, or he wasn't really getting what he thought he deserved. But I wasn't up in arms about him leaving. And I think it's obviously, as I said, hindsight now, that just because Barkas got, because when Barkas was signed, I think everyone was excited about it. And obviously he's not performed to his maybe full potential that he maybe expected, but I think there could be several factors to that, and he may come good. Who knows? That's a debate for another day. But I wasn't up in arms when he left Craig Gordon, but I still think he is a solid keeper. And I think that watching Hearts a few times this season, you wouldn't think they would be tested that much, but when he's been called upon, he has made some good saves. So I think he still is a decent keeper, and in terms of the Scotland squad, I'd still have him there as the kind of number two.
Okay, right, let's go for the defence. I noted down Robertson, Gallagher, McTominay, Tierney and O'Donnell. I think Scotland play with the back three and then have O'Donnell and Robertson out wide, and then obviously back into the defensive position when defending. But I noted those guys down. Any disagreements?
Maybe controversial to some, but I'd have O'Donnell out of the team. I'd have Liam Cooper in the central area, and I'd put Tierney out right. Just, I know Tierney's probably not as effective outright, but I still think he's world class now, and I still think he is a really good player. So he'd still be brilliant outright, and I think I just don't rate O'Donnell personally.
I think that for me, the stalwart, the one that has to be in for me in the performance against Serbia was McTominay. I thought Scott McTominay was fabulous, and people will moan about the corner with Luka Jovic, but him and Declan Gallagher pocketed Mitrovic for basically all of the game, and Tierney basically dealt with Tadic, and it was really well worked through that. For that defence. So I think McTominay and Gallagher, they two boys have to play. Who else decides to put in whatever? Obviously Robertson will play left wing back. That's a given. Although I've seen a few arguments to switch him and Tierney, but for me, no, I can't see that. The thing about Tierney is Tierney can play left centre back very, very effectively. The debate about O'Donnell and Tierney, that's probably another one I've seen as well. I've thought that obviously Declan refers to as well. But for me, I think just to make sure that we're good centre halves that are in there. I've seen a few arguments for Scott McKenna. For me, Scott McKenna can sit on the bench sit on the bench for this one, and no disrespect to him, but it's got not anything to do with him personally. I wouldn't have him in the team if it were me, but I just think the way that Gallagher and McTominay performed in that game in Serbia, and I think they really, really deserve to be in the starting lineup all the time in centre-half.
Yeah, I think we're expected to sort of see the same back five. Some people might be frustrated with McTominay playing there, but because he's been quite good for Man United in central midfield, but I'd still keep him at that right centre back position. He helps us so much in terms of getting out and playing from the back. People like Gallagher, there might be some sort of discussions about that and whether he should play. And there's also some outside shouts for the squad. I think maybe the likes of Jack Hendry, who I don't expect to be called up, but him and sort of Jason Kerr, they could maybe we have a chance. I don't think they will, but there should be at least be discussions, I think, in terms of these players, and this could be a chance for experimenting for the Euros, but
that's what I mean as well. Like, I think obviously I don't think any games are given for Scotland to go in and win, but I think obviously they've got a lot of absences, so I just feel like Scotland are still going to be see if you move Cooper in, you're essentially moving him in for O'Donnell but putting Tierney out. Mm-hmm. Right, I think that's a stronger defence, because obviously Liam Cooper's Premier League defender with Leeds. I think he's used to playing in obviously high intensity games. And you've got
Cooper, I think he sort of dropped out the weekend as well. I'm not sure if that's injury or whatnot. I'm not sure if it's injury though, if it's just what's happened. But if he gets back in the squad, I'm sure he'll be fine. He'll certainly be an option.
I can't remember if it was Liam Cooper or it was Palmer? I think it might have been Palmer. Yeah, all right, okay, I've just Googled. It was Palmer. Right, no, that's fine. I was about to argue with you there, but I've got the two Liams.
Palmer is, well, not starting him.
Right, no, that.
No. That performance, I still have nightmares about his performance in Kazakhstan.
I'd rather see somebody like Sean Rooney in there than Palmer.
Yeah. I think he definitely does deserve us. He definitely deserves a shout.
I think I'll agree with you on that, Declan, about O'Donnell, maybe for Cooper. I don't know about Tierney playing in the right, though. I think he is more effective, obviously, on the left. As
100%, yeah. I just think he's stronger than O'Donnell still on the right.
Yeah. No,
if I'm talking about what I think Steve Clarke will do, I don't think he will put Tierney on the right, but I'm just speaking from a personal level. I'd probably rather see Tierney there. But as you said, it's obviously Tierney's more effective on the left. So
in the future, I think we'll be sorted and set the right back position with somebody like Patterson, who's looked really good for Rangers so far, but I think it's a bit early for him with this squad.
Yeah,
I definitely
The midfield, I put Jack, McGregor, McGinn. Any disagreements with that?
I would be going with
Armstrong.
That. There's maybe shouts for Armstrong. I could see Armstrong going there, but me personally, I'd stick with that too as well, Stefan.
Yep, I can't see any. I thought McGregor and Jack worked really, really well together in Serbia. And when they just in general, they seem to complement each other quite well when they're playing in the Scotland team. They know their roles. And John McGinn's just an excellent footballer. He's basically just can't have him out of your Scotland team.
Yeah, I think he's
now, anyway, he's certainly on drop. The way he plays for Aston Villa, it's as if he plays every single game as if it's his last. You know, I love players like that, you know?
I think for me, Ryan Jack in Serbia, him and McGregor, they played so well together. And Jack really, as he does with Rangers, he does the dirty work that other midfielders don't, and he gets stuck in. And just, you know, the way him and McGregor combined, I just couldn't drop either of them. And as you say, McGinn is virtually undroppable.
Can I, Stefan, throw a bit of a bombshell down if you don't mind?
I go.
This could be a bad one. I would drop Christie and put Turnbull in.
We spoke about this before we came on, and I'd agree with you, but it's where you fit them in. I think it depends, because I don't know. Like Christie seems to do a shift for Scotland, and I still think for Celtic, he. One thing I've always said this season, like, I know he's got a hard time for his like shooting ability and his crossing ability, but see in terms of how much he runs and he works kind of hard, so he's important to have in there. And obviously it's quite, I don't know, I think Turnbull would probably thrive, but I think it's his first time getting called up, so.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. There's no arguing. I'll never accuse Ryan Christie of doing is never putting a shift in. He always runs his heart out. I'll give him his due there, and that's obvious every time we all watch Celtic, whether it be at Celtic Park, well, hopefully soon, or whether it's on the TV. You always see him running. You always see him making an effort. I just feel as if a lot of, and I know I'm kind of. It sounds as if I'm slightly contradicting myself with what I said about the defence with the guys really playing well in Serbia. Obviously, Christie scored the goal that scored our goal over there as well. But it's just the thing, as especially with Turnbull playing so well on form as well just now. And it could also be an incentive for Ryan Christie as well, because see if he sees Turnbull getting played in front of him the next couple of qualifiers, it might be up his game for the Euros. And that means that you've always got great when you've got players that are hungry and that are getting up. So sometimes being dropped out of the team isn't the worst thing that can happen. Sometimes it can be the making of a player getting dropped. It can maybe give them a wee boost and maybe give them a wee shot of energy that says, hold on a minute, I need to go and get my jersey back off of whoever's playing in front of me. Do you know?
I get that. I accept that. I would like Turnbull in the Scotland team. I'd like him to be in the team, but I don't know if Steve Clark would drop Christie for him, but I think it would be a good option to have. Right, let's move on to the strike force. Scotland have got Dykes, Griffiths, Burke, and some would say they've got McBurney. I disagree with that.
So would I.
Who would you start? For me, I would start Lyndon Dykes. I don't know about yous, but I think his performances, the way he brought the ball down, his hold-up play, just everything he did right at Livingston to get on the move to Queen's Park Rangers was everything he sort of, you know, everything about him, just he did it for Scotland. So I would have him in my team. Any disagreements?
Nope.
Nah,
I'd agree with you.
Not at all.
I'd be saying going with sort of Dykes and Christie up top again. As Mark says, I think Turnbull deserves to be in sort of the squad at least, and he probably deserves to be in the team based off if we're going on form. I think in terms of system, Christie suits it perfectly. In terms of Dykes is up there for flick-ons, chasing everything down, you know. The thing about Dykes is he's actually not been in great form. I don't think he's scored in 23 games since sort of November time, so he's not been at his best recently, but I think, again, he's maybe in a similar vein to Marshall. I think he starts anyway, because it's not like the options are much better, and the way he plays, it just suits the system perfectly.
No, I think Oliver Burke and Ollie McBurney, no disrespect to the both of them, but I don't think that they're even anywhere near the picture to be starting for Scotland.
And how many goals have they had this full season? I think, have they scored like one each?
One of Burke's was like a deflection.
Yeah.
And then the thing about that is, for me, I know, I get exactly where Lewis is coming from with the flick-ons, but I'm going to return to the point that I made the last time I was on about when I was getting annoyed about El Yunusi playing up front with Edward. It's when we were playing, Celtic were playing a 3-5-2, as I hate this midfielder playing up their striker. I love two out-and-out strikers. But again, another argument that could shoot me down here is the fact that Griffiths haven't been having so much game time, you know. He's not had hundreds and hundreds of game time. But for me, if it were me, I would be looking to start Dykes alongside Griffiths. A reason for also experimentation as well, and for getting them to sort of get a bit to understanding of each other. Because if you can get the both of them fit and firing, that would be my strike force that starts in June. Would be there too. Dykes to do all the dirty work and hold the ball out, and Griffiths to play as on the shoulder as a last man, and Griffiths will chase everything down, and it just gives you a couple of options there as well, you know.
I'm not saying this to be controversial at all, but Lee Griffiths isn't good enough for the Celtic team, let alone the Scotland team. I don't think he should be anywhere near the picture. His fitness for Celtic has been nothing short of an absolute shambles. And the only reason that Lee Griffiths is talked about in a good light by Celtic fans is because he scored 40 goals in a season 6 years ago or 5 years ago. It's a big no for me. If I had to have anyone up front with Dykes, it would be Kevin Nisbet. But it certainly would not be Lee Griffiths.
Nisbet's a great shout, Stefan. Do you know that? But do you know what I was going to say? A wee red herring about Nisbet, but sorry, a wee thing to say about it. I don't want Nisbet to get end up with the Lauren Shankland. I remember when Shankland was tipped to play for Scotland, all the excitement, all the thing, and he's not really kicked on in a Scotland jersey, has he? I know you could argue not been given the opportunity, but obviously there must be a reason for that. So do we really think that he's ready to go and make that step up? Again, that could be a great idea to call him up for these two games, and then we'll be able to see for ourselves before the summer. Because obviously these qualifiers are of massive importance as well for us. for the World Cup, of course it is. But again, we've obviously got to look forward to the summer as well. That's another thing we need to always have that in the back of our mind, and some decisions need to be made for preparation for that as well. Because it's the thing about international football is you don't get a lot of time with the players, so you need to. And if you're trying to prepare yourself for a big tournament, you need to try and get as much out of these international breaks as you can.
I think with Nisbet as well, that I think that was his first goal in 2 months. I think it was. So if you're talking on form, I mean, I tweeted back in when we actually were playing Serbia and stuff like that. I said that Kevin Nisbet should be in that squad ahead of Ollie McBurnie. And I still kind of stick by that. But if you're talking about deserving a call-up, then now, I suppose, as you said, have them in the squad maybe. But on form, he's kind of obviously didn't get his move. He kind of, well, I don't know, but we hear he's maybe threw the toys at the pram and handed in a transfer request. So maybe right now is not the right time. But then again, it's hard to say because obviously Ollie McBurnie and Oliver Burke are in the squad, so it's like
the thing about Ollie McBurnie is, and people will say, oh, it's because he's a Rangers fan, or oh, it's because he doesn't do the huddle. It's not the case at all. I just don't think he's a very talented footballer, and the fact that someone paid £20 million to bring him to Sheffield United still blows my mind. You know, when he came on for Scotland, he took a penalty and he took it really well and he scored it really well. But then he went and played Israel and he missed an absolute sitter. And any sort of good word that I had to say about his taking the ball to the corner and the penalty, missing a sitter against Israel, which would have done the Nations League a world a good, he ruined it. So, no.
Agreed, mate, absolutely. Do you know why? I agree with you because a lot of people accuse us and us as Celtic supporters of not liking Ollie McBurnie because he doesn't do the huddle and the rest of it, which is absolute nonsense. If I was going to be with that attitude, Ryan Jack couldn't be in my starting lineup, and I virtually think that Ryan Jack is one of the first names in the team sheet in the Scotland team just now. So it's not that case at all. It's the fact that he's just not very good. He's just not the now. Now I hope for Scotland's sake that he can improve and somehow maybe kick on. But for now, in this present moment in time, if you're the other team and you see him noted on the team sheet in front of someone else, it's not a guy that it strikes the fear into your heart when he's playing. Like Lyndon Dykes, people will watch that game back against Serbia and be like, oh God, the centre has to be like, we're in for 90 minutes of getting absolutely tortured after this big guy.
Aye, because the likes of Harry Maguire, though, where they played against McBurnie and think, oh, it's this guy, but see somebody like Dykes be dangerous. Just quickly, in regards to the summer as well, I think a player hasn't been mentioned, maybe forgot about, somebody like James Forrest's got to play himself back in. I don't think he'll be in this squad, but it'll certainly be interesting to see come the summer if he's played himself back into contention. You know, so there's a few players that probably got a chance to prove himself over the next few months, and you've certainly got the best chance of doing that in the Scotland squad that will be announced tomorrow.
I used to have a deep line hatred for James Forrest because I felt, oh, this guy just sits out in the wing and he doesn't do much. But then one of my mates, I'm not going to mention him because he'll rip me for actually praising him, but telling me about how good James Forrest is, and he gave me all the stats, and it sort of changed my outlook on it and said, well, he actually is rather influential. And sort of underrated for Scotland. So I definitely think he should be, not maybe not in this squad, but I definitely think he should be in the team for the Euros. Where, I don't know where we fit him in, but I think he's a player that you sort of have to fit into the puzzle.
It's good to have the wide options as well, because I think that Scotland going forward are struggling to create chances. You've got a guy up top who likes to head the ball, but you've got nobody crossing balls into him. So it's obviously worked to qualify, I think, but that is one criticism of Scotland is still being that they don't score enough goals, and it's hard to see where a lot of goals might come from. And I think if you get Forrest and Ryan Fraser, maybe, I don't know his situation fully, and I know he's been kind of in and out maybe of the Newcastle team, but I think that having wide options, because as I said, Dykes obviously likes, he's a big physical striker, he's going to be effective if you put balls in the box. So, and that's one thing Scotland weren't doing enough. So yeah.
Okay. Let's wrap it up there. Obviously, for a podcast that we didn't expect to have a lot of talking points for, we've managed to last the full, episode. I want to say a massive thanks to Lewis, Declan, and Mark for all coming on. I really appreciate you guys taking time out your day to do this, as always.